The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Gambling on Tourists. Raleigh's ambitious plan to double convention center space is tied to attracting more conventioners. Numbers tell a different story, however. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Creating a Destination. Raleigh weighs its options as it considers the cost of expanding the Raleigh Convention Center, written by Laura Bromette. The crowd gathered for the opening of the original Raleigh Civic Center in 1977 was met with pop singer Petula Clark's voice emanating from the building's shiny new speakers. The song, a hit that dated to 1964, promised, "Things will be great when you're downtown." Clark's tune set the stage for the inauguration of the old building that was plopped directly onto Fayetteville Street with the goal of transforming the pedestrian mall into Raleigh's Main Street. That never happened. Raleigh tried again 3 decades later when the current Raleigh Convention Center opened with more pomp and circumstance. A 2-day festival in 2008 celebrated the new building, the reopening of Fayetteville Street to vehicles, and the start of Raleigh's journey to becoming a big city. But now local leaders have deemed the 500,000-square-foot building inadequate. The convention center is now slated to double in size with a second building added for the price of about $230 million. This expansion talk comes at a time when the current facility has seen attendance knocked by the pandemic, high operating losses, and growing competition from other arts and entertainment projects vying for a cut of the taxpayer funding that's keeping the center afloat. And above all of that, some convention center business observers believe the industry outlook is bleak. But Raleigh officials are quick to suggest that the city needs to look at the long-term benefit of a large convention center and not get stuck on the short-term convention industry woes. In the end, the objective for city and county leaders is to solidify the city's reputation as a destination, a laughable thought in 1977 when the Raleigh Civic Center was booking mainly boat and car shows and a few concerts. The city has grown since then, of course, but the hefty price tag isn't the only hurdle the expansion plan faces as the city weighs whether an expensive expansion is worth the investment, especially as other priorities loom. Booking larger events will require hundreds more hotel rooms in downtown Raleigh. Red Hat Amphitheater, one of the most popular music venues in the Triangle, sits directly in the expansion path and will have to be relocated. And the question remains as to if the large in-person events industry will fully rebound after the pandemic changed the ways the world views gatherings. But some city and county leaders and the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau see the expansion as an opportunity to bolster tourism in the area. The convention center's purpose really is about economic impact. It's to fill hotels to help replenish interlocal funding, says Carrie Painter, general manager of the Raleigh Convention and Performing Arts Complex, referencing the hospitality tax revenues collected by Wake County. The more hotels and the more food and beverage money they spend downtown, the more we help fill that pot back up. Guzzling cash. The Raleigh Convention Center machine, while bringing in visitor spending, isn't flush with cash on its own. The operation is far from breaking even. It requires an infusion of tax dollars to stay afloat, but local leaders are touting expansion as a necessary one, despite the convention center's income statement. For several years, the center has been operating at a loss. Expenditures have hovered at just over $8 million since at least 2016. That line includes paying people, utilities, and marketing efforts, Painter says. Revenue, however, wasn't coming close to that number even before the pandemic. In the fiscal year ending June 2016, the center brought in $6.16 million. In 2018, that number was $5.17 million. During the pandemic, revenue fell to $4.44 million in the year ending June 2020 and to $301,345 for 2021. The most recent period, encompassing the second half of 2021 and the first half of 2022, saw revenue of $4.36 million, still well below its expenditures for the period of $8.84 million. But the convention center operation guzzles more cash than those financials show. Millions of dollars from Wake County tax collections are pumped into the Raleigh Convention Center each year, known as the Convention Center Financing Fund. The funding is the result of an interlocal agreement between Wake County County and the City of Raleigh. In fiscal year 2022, the fund gave $20.65 million to the Convention Center, according to the city's annual financial report. The Convention Center's expansion means that amount will be growing in upcoming years. A valley formed by commerce. At the time of its demolition in 2006, the original Raleigh Civic Center was an eyesore. The new Raleigh Convention Center building rose in stark contrast, a design that 15 years later still appears modern and sleek. The 500,000-square-foot building features huge floor-to-ceiling windows, filling the interior with natural light and views of downtown. In 2008, Triangle Business Journal wrote, "The feeling is one of walking in a valley formed by commerce. It's the very feel that a big city must offer to visitors to impress them." Yet upon the center's 10-year anniversary, Jones Lang LaSalle compiled a report for the Raleigh City Council deeming the Convention Center as the county's top area in need of an upgrade. The 2018 report, dubbed the Destination Strategic Plan, recommended the Convention Center refresh its sales strategy, add hotel room inventory, and expand its physical space. The reason was to make Raleigh more competitive for larger events that attract big dollars. The plan was to use the adjoining lot, housing the Red Hat Amphitheater, and build another 500,000-square-foot convention center building. The Convention Center, Amphitheater, and the Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts are all owned by the City of Raleigh and operate as the Raleigh Convention and Performing Arts Complex. The conversation was revived earlier this year when the council requested a refresh study by JLL. The update reaffirmed the consulting firm's earlier findings of the necessity of more hotel rooms and the center's expansion. "If you built it tomorrow, we would already start to fill it," Painter says of the second building. "We are already unable to bid on multiple pieces of business because we don't have enough footage. But obviously it's a very expensive endeavor and the pandemic did a number on all of us. It just had to be moved back." Though exact expansion plans have yet to be drawn, the project's funding is assured. The interlocal agreement between Wake County and the City of Raleigh allows funds from the county's hospitality tax to be used for various tourism, entertainment, and community spaces. The tax, established in 1991, includes a 6% levy on room occupancy sales and a 1% levy on prepared food and beverage sales. In 2016, the Wake County Board of Commissioners and the Raleigh City Council agreed to allocate $230 million to pay for the new building, with another $30 million allocated for the relocation of Red Hat Amphitheater. Those funds are now set to be used as early as 2030. Painter is counting on those funds for the new 500,000-square-foot building, but Mayor Marianne Baldwin isn't promising that $230 million will remain in the model. Baldwin, a city council member in 2016, says the city is committed to expanding the center, but nailing down specifics is still premature. In the same process that the $230 million was allocated for the expansion, amendments made to the interlocal agreement, the amount can be changed before 2030. Baldwin is hoping to see more analysis and industry data before committing to that price tag. Meanwhile, Painter's group will present updates to the City Council as decisions are made. Painter expects to next update the council, which now has four new faces, in February. In the meantime, work has already been done to renovate the existing facility, according to the city's website. About $6 million was spent in 2022 on a refresh of the center's carpet, furnishings, wall coverings, and paint. The city also has $5 million plans to optimize four spaces within the center to make it, quote, more flexible and maximize use of all areas, unquote. As for the Red Hat Amphitheater, the current plan is to keep the site in downtown, Painter says. The amphitheater was opened with the intent of being a temporary space, but the venue drives a lot of business to nearby retail and restaurants, and its view of surrounding towers adds to its charm. One suggestion had been to move it to Dix Park, but to keep the venue downtown, a plan has formed to shift the amphitheater to a nearby property, leaving room for a 500,000-square-foot building in its current location. Painter does not specify an exact location for the venue, which holds about 6,000 people, but the intention is to keep it in the complex. Attracting a hotel. For a $300,000 fee, the JLL Tourism and Destination team spent a year analyzing the Triangle market and crafting the Destination Strategic Plan. If implemented correctly, the 10-year plan promises to increase tourism in Wake County to 21.7 million total visitors by 2028. While a higher number of visitors does benefit the area's reputation, it's getting those visitors to open their wallets that really matters. In 2021, Wake County saw 15.8 million visitors who generated $2.3 $3 billion in direct spending, according to Visit Raleigh. Capturing that spending along with related tax collections is a key performance indicator. For the fiscal year ending in June 2022, the Raleigh Convention Center reported 243,682 attendees, a fraction of the county's total visitors. JLL, along with her painter and her team, believes that the number could be much higher if downtown Raleigh had more hotel rooms to offer potential booking groups. Though new hotels such as Kempton are on the way, JLL only considers hotels within about three blocks as supply for the convention center. It's kind of a chicken and egg issue happening with the hotel and convention center. You don't want to build a hotel unless you have business for it, and if you build business for it, you need hotels, Painter says. But we are already short hotel rooms to take care of what we have now. Having more square footage available will open the center to hosting multiple groups at a time, but additional hotel rooms could mean larger events in even just the current space. Two city-owned lots at the south end of Fayetteville Street have become part of the convention center expansion conversation, with one of the lots slated for a 500-key hotel. The project started before the pandemic but was put on pause over concerns about evaporating tax revenue when the pandemic crushed tourism and business travel. The project was revived in 2022, with the city once again seeking developers through a process known as Request for Information. JLL is handling the RFI process on behalf of the city. The deadline for requests was in August, and the city council is currently waiting for feedback from JLL, Baldwin says. The city is hoping for the hotel portion of the project to have a minimum of 500 rooms with meeting space and feature an upscale national brand name. The city council will now decide on a developer based on the submitted request, though the current council has four new members from when the RFI was put out. The available land spans 2.5 acres across from the Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts and is zoned for up to 40 stories. The city plans to extend Fayetteville Street through the property, effectively splitting it into two sites measuring about 1 acre each. The city is offering an incentive of $30 million in public funding for parking and infrastructure assistance, though some flexibility for its use is possible. A tough industry outlook. All of this comes against a backdrop of a convention industry that saw business grind to a halt during COVID-19. 3 years later, demand has bounced back for experiences such as sit-down dining, sports games, and concerts, but where demand stands for large conventions is still unclear. Many events have returned, but that doesn't mean the same attendance as before. Attendees are hoping for digital options, offering event presentations and speeches streamed virtually instead of spending all day at a convention center in person. Digital options are also attractive to corporations looking to cut costs tied to employee travel. In 2022, a convention center expert told Axios Dallas that convention attendance is way down from pre-pandemic levels across the country and may never return. Haywood Sanders, a professor of public administration at the University of Texas San Antonio and author of the 2014 book Convention Center Follies, presented some of his findings to Austin's Downtown Commission in early 2022. The Texas city, often compared to Raleigh, is planning a convention center expansion with a cost of more than $1 billion. Every single convention center in this country has lost business, and no matter how big or small they are, is there any research that documents that expanding a convention center allows you to attract a significant fraction of that lost business? The answer is no, Sanders said. The nation's four major convention hubs, Chicago, Las Vegas, Atlanta, and Orlando, all saw business remain flat from 1999 to 2019, Sanders said, even though they all expanded. Over that period, there's no necessary relationship between expanding a center and getting more business over the cities, and those that have expanded existing centers have seen the same attendance they used to have, Sanders said. Still, Painter and Baldwin both agree that expansion is happening at the Raleigh Convention Center. The size and scope of that expansion, however, is up for debate. Where we used to have a lot more people and a lot more events, they were either smaller or no impact. Now we have really been intentional in optimizing the best citywide big business first and then working our way down, Painter says. And there's a quality of life piece that we're proud of too, like people always saying, we graduated here. And now we're going to turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook as it's related to our cover story. This is written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Put Convention Center Expansion on the Back Burner. In its latest iteration of its destination strategic plan for Raleigh, a property investment strategist, JLL, noted that Wake County's 10-year tourism plan calls for more than 21.7 million annual visitors by 2028. Back in 2018, the 2028 goal was 19.5 million. So after 3 years of dealing with the pandemic and the follow-up concerns on the business strategy of conventions and managing crowds safely in packed spaces, our goal has now increased? To put it in perspective, Wake County saw 15.8 million visitors in 2021, according to Visit Raleigh. So from 2022 to 2028, our tourism and city boosters believe we can add another 6 million tourists to the county, and real estate giant JLL wants to assist us in reaching that goal. This is an ambitious plan, and we commend our city leaders for devising such an aggressive strategy to make Raleigh a destination city. As part of the overall plan, Raleigh has to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to double the size of the Raleigh Convention Center, and at the same time have an accelerated plan to add thousands of hotel rooms. As reporter Laura Brumette points out in her centerpiece this week, city leaders say the community needs to look at the long-term benefit of a larger convention center and not get stuck on the short-term industry woes. Again, we agree in theory, but sadly, this is not the time to think about a convention center expansion. Just like no one really knows the future of office buildings in this country with the post-pandemic rush of work from home taking solid roots in our normal lives, no one really knows if organizations and entities will all stay true to hosting giant annual conventions where thousands of conventioneers converge to buy, sell, and trade the latest line of goods and services. Just like office buildings, while it is clear that the convention business is not just going to go away, it is equally unclear as to whether people will actually come to conventions with the same zest and vigor. But what we know for sure is there is a lack of hotel rooms near our current convention center. Raleigh has only 929 hotel rooms within walking distance of the convention center. Austin, Texas has 4,330. Nashville, Tennessee has 4,153. Research author JLL notes an average convention center has about 2,465 hotel rooms nearby. There is limited risk in the city exploring deals with private developers to build hotel rooms near the Raleigh Convention Center. Tourism officials have already indicated that if Raleigh had more hotels, Raleigh will have more conventions, especially larger ones. But for now, we need to put any talk of a Raleigh Convention Center expansion on the back burner. Let's come up with an aggressive plan to tackle and solve the hotel rooms issue. Once we see all the hotels in our current convention center are running near 80 or 90% capacity, we can start talking about expanding. If the convention businesses were to explode in the future, it will take some time. The Center for Exhibition Industry Research's CEIR Total Index, a measure of convention business activity, was in the second quarter about 25.5% below 2019 levels. The outfit expects its index to be about 10% below 2019 levels in 2023 and to be about 3.5% above 2019 levels in 2024. But the need for hotel rooms is now. Our city officials will just have to decouple the two issues. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. A glimpse of downtown. It wasn't that long ago that downtown Raleigh lamented the lack of a grocery store, a key amenity for attracting residents, and that's why a new report from the Downtown Raleigh Alliance hints at an interesting shift. The fourth quarter report notes that 2,034 residential units are under construction in 11 projects, and another 8,460 units have been proposed in 27 projects. So that's a stunning amount of people moving downtown. What's also interesting is that no new office product broke ground downtown in 2022, a reflection of how developers are watching to see how the work-from-home trend plays out. There is office space under construction. For example, the 400H project on Hillsborough Street is expected to top out soon and bring 144,410 square feet of office space to a prime location. More office space is in the works, such as the revamp of the Creamery with 242,000 square feet of office and Tower 3 at Block 83, with 295,000 square feet of office space. Of course, plans can change as the economy shifts, but as recently as 2019, it was a huge deal when Weaver Street Market opened, finally giving downtown a grocery store. And yet, here's an interesting fact. For the fourth quarter 2019, Class A vacancy downtown was 4%. For the fourth quarter 2022, that number was 11.42%. Star-studded chefs lend fundraising support. Ashley Christensen, Chidi Kumar, and Ricky Moore are among the chefs lending a hand as the Frankie Lemon School holds a key fundraiser with the Triangle Wine and Food Experience. Last year, the event raised $2.3 million, its most successful year ever, for a school that provides programs for children from the ages of 2 to 6, regardless of any disability. The lineup of culinary talent that Ashley Christensen has been able to put together is truly unmatched, says Marsha Hargett, executive director of the Frankie Lemon Foundation. The event kicks off February 2 with events in private homes and in locales around the Triangle. Tickets for some of those events, such as at the Willard Rooftop Bar, remain available. The main event on February 4 is sold out. Now, bow time has a new meaning. Two established names in North Carolina's food and drink scene are teaming up for something new to wash down your chicken and biscuits with, as long as you're 21 and older. Bojangles and Appalachian Mountain Brewery in Boone have concocted Bojangles Hard Sweet Tea. Set to hit shelves in March at Food Lion, Harris Teeter, Lowe's Foods, Walmart, and other grocery and convenience stores in the Carolinas, the drink, which is 5% alcohol by volume, will be available in 12 packs for 12-ounce cans and individual 16-ounce cans. It won't be sold at Bojangles locations, but AMB's taproom in Boone plans to serve the drink. NC Company sues Disney. A North Carolina company has trademark issues with Disney. L.L. Whitfield Family Trust, a family-owned apparel firm, filed a 16-page lawsuit this month alleging that Disney and its Marvel Entertainment subsidiary are infringing on its rights. Whitfield, out of Fayetteville, does business under I Have Issues Incorporated and has I Have Issues as a trademark. It claims Disney is infringing by using that term on T-shirts. UNC's Baycott gets another NIL deal. Armando Baycott of UNC Chapel Hill continues to be a major beneficiary as the rush to name, image, and likeness, or NIL, deals continues. Baycott is teaming up with Dunkin' to promote the donut and coffee chain's products. Dunkin' has a history of signing stars appealing to young people, such as TikTok sensation Charli D'Amelio. Baycott has also landed a separate NIL deal with Raleigh startup BOA Nutrition. He previously signed deals with Bad Boy Mowers and Jimmy's Famous Seafood, among others. Baycott, with 146,000 Instagram followers, has the third highest NIL valuation at $1 million among college basketball players, according to recruiting site On3. You have to believe recruits are watching. UNC just landed the number two prospect for 2024, Ian Jackson. And finally, Good Nights open in its new home. A longtime staple of Raleigh's nightlife is finally back in a permanent home. Good Nights Comedy Club opened in the Village District at 401 Woodburn Road, adjacent to the Flying Biscuit Cafe. Good Nights was located on West Morgan Street for decades, but that location has been demolished to make way for a mixed-use apartment complex. The project would include 401 apartments. Good Nights had been operating in the former K&W cafeteria at the Village District. We're thrilled to welcome guests into Good Night's permanent new home, says owner Brad Grossman. After months of hosting guests in our temporary location, we're ready to unveil our new space, which is packed with amenities to further enhance the comedy club experience. And now we turn to some of the main news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. Partners sought to develop 300 acres in Briar Creek, written by Kaylee Thompson. A prime site in the Briar Creek area is being prepped to become a large development. Stevens Enterprises, with assistance from CBRE Raleigh, is looking for a joint venture partner to develop more than 300 acres off U.S. Highway 70. The property is an assemblage of 13 parcels north of the Briar Creek Commons shopping district and up the road from Alexander Place. We are seeking a partner who can bring the expertise and capability to develop a first-class project that meets the demands of the Triangle market, says Matt Stevens, vice president of Stevens Enterprises. Stevens says the land has been in his family for more than 50 years, with his grandfather purchasing the first parcel in the 1970s and the family acquiring more land over the years. The property is along Leesville Road and Highway 70. The 309.838 acres are mostly in Durham County, with approximately 40 acres in Wake County. The total assessed value for the 13 properties is about $11.33 million. The listing will go live at the end of January with no list price. It will be open to offers and negotiations. Stevens is looking to partner with a developer who will use creativity to see what works best in that location. He says he is open to any development type, but that it will more than likely be a mixed-use development. The combination of the infill location and large size makes this one of the most attractive opportunities in not only the Triangle, but in the entire Southeast region, says Chester Allen, Executive Vice President for CBRE Raleigh's Land Services Group. The location is simply unmatched and is a bullseye for every type of development in the Triangle, he says. The properties will need to be rezoned with both counties. The current zoning is agriculture residential. Stevens, who is an active investor in properties across the Triangle, says the rezoning won't be done until a development partner is chosen. And our next story is written by Zach Ezone. Pfizer to grow Sanford presence, pharma giant acquiring Abzena facility under construction in Lee County. A global pharmaceutical giant is growing its footprint in North Carolina through the addition of a new manufacturing facility in Sanford. Pfizer has entered an agreement with Abzena, a contract development and manufacturing organization, or CDMO, to acquire a biologics drug substance production facility that remains under construction. Pfizer anticipates the facility will be operational by 2024 and that by 2025 it will employ about 300 people. It currently employs 100. This would bring Pfizer's North Carolina workforce to more than 4,500. The companies expect the transaction to close in the first quarter of the year. Financial terms of the deal were not disclosed. The acquisition expands Pfizer's research, clinical, and commercial manufacturing capacity in biologics, a class of drugs derived from naturally occurring systems. The facility will help Pfizer, which in 2021 reported revenue of $81.3 billion, accelerate the development of products in its pipeline and support customers of Pfizer Center One. The company's global CDMO, says Mike McDermott, Chief Global Supply Officer and Executive Vice President at Pfizer. Abzena, which operates facilities in the U.S. and U.K., in 2021 selected Sanford as the site for the new manufacturing facility over competing sites in Philadelphia and San Diego, among others. The San Diego-based company planned to invest more than $200 million in the facility, designed to accommodate Phase 3 in commercial manufacturing. As part of an effort to secure the investment in job creation, Abzena was approved for a reimbursement incentive from the state worth more than $6.9 million, provided it reaches certain milestones. In order to receive the state incentives, the company had to invest at least $142 million in the state by 2024. The deal adds to Pfizer's local manufacturing network, which already includes sites in Rocky Mount and Sanford. Pfizer in 2017 announced its plans to invest $100 million in its Sanford facility, which was followed in 2019 by a $500 million expansion. Since 2017, the company has invested more than $5 billion in expanding its manufacturing footprint in the U.S., including $1.4 billion in North Carolina, according to a statement from Pfizer. In a statement, Abzena CEO Matt Stober says the company is thrilled to announce this agreement with Pfizer. I am very proud of the facility and our colleagues who work tirelessly in its construction, and we look forward to building our future collaboration with Pfizer, Stober says. Retail CEO calls Raleigh a bullseye target. This is written by Laura Brumette. A month after announcing the brand's North Carolina debut, a retail executive dubbed Raleigh a key target. Rothy's, a direct-to-consumer, digitally-focused shoe brand, will soon open its first store in the state in North Hills. The San Francisco-based brand is owned by one of Brazil's largest retail conglomerates, Alpargatas S.A. During the National Retail Federation's annual conference in New York City on January 15, Alpargatas CEO Roberto Funari spoke about the company's strategy for opening physical retail locations, a move that could be considered outdated. Rothy's is taking a digital-first approach, using consumer data to expand its physical store presence, Funari says. It's a bullseye target, Funari said when asked why the brand is opening in Raleigh. The customer community we have, we know from the online data, and we use this to inform on where the best locations are to find the same look-alike bullseye targets. And now we turn to the On Tech and Finance page, written by Lauren Onasorge. Spiffy hires CFO with eye to potential IPO. Brad Schoenberg has a long history of winning exits. On-demand car care startup GetSpiffy has hired a chief financial officer with a history of exits. Brad Schoenberg, former CFO of Channel Advisor, MaxPoint, and Spoonflower, started recently for the Research Triangle Park-based company. Could it mean Spiffy, which has raised more than $40 million in outside capital and has a $60 million annual run rate, is positioning itself for a public debut? CEO Scott Wingo says, maybe. If we could keep growing and get investors to understand this digitalization of the auto industry, we think a possible exit is definitely an IPO, Wingo says. While there's nothing on the horizon, having Schoenberg makes us ready for if and when that ever happens, he says. Wingo says it's clear the IPO window is closed for now. It's always good to be ready versus to have to react, he says. The public markets are dicey, but exit opportunities are out there. In December, Auto Nation acquired Spiffy competitor RepairSmith for $190 million. Wingo says expectations are high and draws a lot of comparison to Channel Advisor, which he co-founded before taking it public. Channel Advisor was recently taken private by Commerce Hub. One of the whole theories of Spiffy is we'll see the auto industry go through the same changes the e-commerce industry did, he says. Schoenberg has a history of executing triangle exits, and not just on the New York Stock Exchange. With Channel Advisor and MaxPoint, that was through initial public offerings. At Spoonflower, it was through a buyout by Shutterfly in 2021. I really like building good businesses, and I find that when you build good businesses, those things sort of take care of themselves, Schoenberg says. The nice thing is, having done this before, I feel very comfortable that wherever we go from here, I'll be prepared to help execute on that. North Carolina terminates incentives after firms miss hiring goals. As North Carolina works to compete with other states through millions in incentives packages, nothing is guaranteed. Just ask the companies this month that had their incentives agreements canceled after failing to deliver on their promises to bring hundreds of jobs to the state. On January 10, the Economic Investment Committee, a group under the North Carolina Department of Commerce, tasked with approving incentives packages, voted unanimously to terminate the agreements for some companies that never met their milestones, from a sushi company promising rural manufacturing jobs to one of Governor Roy Cooper's first big economic development wins. It's totally out of our hands, says Richard Kronk, CEO of Rice Wrap Foods Corporation, a manufacturer that the state took a bet on in 2018 when it approved a $1.9 million incentives package for its growth. The plan was for Rice Wrap to create 305 jobs in Granville County, but today the headcount stands at 44, and the firm hasn't seen a dollar of that money. Kronk blames COVID for Rice Wrap's struggles. Also terminated was clean tech firm Trilliant Networks, which had already received more than $10,000 from the state and continues to maintain an operation in North Carolina. Trilliant was one of the first development wins of Cooper's administration, and it was the result of a big rally by both recruiters and the business community. Investors bet $13 million on hemp as the future. Investors are taking a big bet on a Durham startup that trades wood for hemp in home construction. Plant D has closed on nearly $13.6 million in capital from 31 investors, according to a securities filing dated January 11. The raise was a mixture of equity and debt and included shares of Series A convertible preferred stock, according to the filing. CEO Josh Dorfman did not return a request to comment. Plant D utilizes hemp for building materials. According to its website, the goal is to address climate change. And finally, Avaya layoffs hit employees in Europe as telecom firm Avaya Technologies of Durham works to pull itself out of a financial hole. More layoffs are happening across the Atlantic. On January 13, Avaya put out another disclosure about layoffs, stating that on January 11, it authorized a reduction in force in Europe. The move follows an earlier layoff action in the U.S. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. Old Mill brings new hope in Goldsboro. Developers want to turn the Borden Mill into apartments. Developers are looking to transform a more than century-old mill in Goldsboro into a new apartment complex. Representatives from Oracle Design Group out of Louisville, Kentucky, presented their plans to redevelop the Borden Mill property during a city council meeting January 9. The property sits at the intersection of Royal Avenue and North William Street. Plans call for the site to be redeveloped into an apartment complex, which would be called the Borden Mill Lofts, with 109 apartments and space for commercial development. Jared Burgess with Oracle Design says the capital investment for the project would be in the $40 to $50 million range. Burgess says the target demographic would be workforce housing, adding that the goal would be to start construction in the third or fourth quarter of this year and that it would take 18 to 20 months to complete construction. The project continues renewed interest in such structures in eastern North Carolina, such as the Rocky Mountain Mills project developed by Capital Broadcasting. The Goldsboro City Council did not hold a vote on the redevelopment plans, as the meeting was merely an information gathering session. The property has a rich history. The buildings on the east side of North William Street were originally built in 1892 as the Goldsboro Cotton Mills, and the buildings on the west side of the street were built in 1900 for the Borden Manufacturing Company, according to the National Register for Historic Places. Borden Manufacturing Company purchased the Goldsboro Cotton Mill in 1904 and combined the operation of the two facilities. For over a century, the mill served as a main employment center for Goldsboro until it closed in 1999, according to the Register. Nostalgic shiny diner sold to cookout owners. The popular Rockin' Comet Diner in Clayton sold for $1.1 million recently to North Carolina fast food giant Cookout. Despite the ownership change, plans call for the location to remain in its current state. The location is staying Rockin' Comet, says Jeremy Reeve, CEO of Cookout. Ben Merrill previously owned Rockin' Comet for about 25 years. Merrill, who will be 79 this year, says that it has been a tumultuous few years. The last 3 years have just worn us out with all this pandemic and stuff, Merrill says. It's time for us to take a break. And finally, Southern Pines delays vote on golf cottages. Several members of the Southern Pines Town Council have expressed concerns about proposed cottages at a local golf course and decided to delay a vote until February. The choice is whether to approve allowing 10 cottages with 56 guest rooms at Southern Pines Golf Club. Mayor Carol Haney says more time is needed. I think this is not going to be a popular decision, but we've had a lot of information given to us to read. I mean, a lot, Haney said during a recent town council meeting. A group led by Kelly Miller that also owns the Pine Needles and Mid Pines Resorts acquired Southern Pines Golf Club in 2020. The cottages would create a place where golfers could stay overnight and play multiple courses. And now we turn to the On Healthcare Higher Education page written by Zach Ezone. Blue Cross NC preps for contract fight. State health plan is scheduled to shift to Aetna in 2025. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, which has thousands of local employees, is pushing back on the state's decision to award a contract to manage the health insurance of state employees to a different company. Blue Cross NC has managed the state health plan for more than four decades, but the State Health Plan Board of Trustees has awarded the upcoming third-party administrative services contract, which begins in 2025, to Aetna, a Connecticut-based company. The state health plan covers nearly 740,000 teachers, state employees, retirees, and their dependents. The Aetna contract oversees spending of more than $17.5 billion over 5 years. Treasurer Dale Folwell announced the decision on January 4. Folwell's office said, "The new contract reflects a partnership that focuses on transparency and lower costs, including potential administrative cost savings of up to $140 million over the term of the contract." But Blue Cross NC soon submitted a formal protest letter to Sam Watts, acting administrator of the state health plan. In its letter, Blue Cross NC raises concerns about the request for proposal process, which the company says was significantly different from the previous 2019 bid process that Blue Cross NC won. For instance, Blue Cross NC says the recent process relied on questions with binary yes or no answers without the ability to offer explanations. Additionally, unlike previous requests for proposals, the 2022 bid process did not include a state preference for vendors with resources in North Carolina. Blue Cross NC employs nearly 50,000 people in the state. Also appealing is UMR, a subsidiary of United Healthcare, which also raised concerns about the evaluation process. Dr. Tunde Sotunde, CEO of Blue Cross NC, said the protest was filed to ensure the best outcome for clients and taxpayers. On January 12, Folwell responded, "Just like Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina has the right to point fingers at everyone else for losing the contract after 44 years, the state health plan, board of trustees, professional staff, and I all have a duty to seek the best financial value and member service for those that teach, protect, and serve, as well as taxpayers like them." Judge rules ICVIA's lawsuit can continue. A lawsuit filed by ICVIA against a Buffalo, New York startup can move forward following a recent ruling in North Carolina Business Court. The decision comes as the Federal Trade Commission is considering a broad ban on non-compete agreements. Judge Adam Conrad on January 6 denied a motion from Circuit Clinical Solutions to dismiss ICVIA's lawsuit filed last year, accusing Circuit of interfering with an agreement with a former ICVIA employee. Circuit argued last July that the case should be dismissed because the restrictive covenants in the agreement are not enforceable. But Conrad disagreed, saying the arguments Circuit raises stray well beyond the limited scope of a motion to dismiss. The future of non-compete agreements is uncertain. The FTC recently proposed to ban non-compete clauses and rescind those currently in effect. And finally, expansion in Chapel Hill planned. Over the next two decades, UNC Health plans to build up to 10 medical office buildings near Interstate 40 in Chapel Hill to keep pace with growing demand for services. The health system in 2021 opened the first medical office building and parking deck at the site and hopes to begin work on a second building soon. UNC Health outlined some of its plans for the roughly 50-acre site on East Town Drive during a Chapel Hill Town Council meeting on January 11. And now we turn to the page written by Kaylee Thompson on real estate. Hillsborough Street to get tiny apartments. Concept would add apartments that are only 160 square feet. The residential development boom on Hillsborough Street in Raleigh isn't slowing down, and a newly proposed apartment complex takes the term micro units to the extreme. Raleigh businessman David Smoot has submitted new site plans for 100 studio apartments that would be a little more than 160 square feet per unit and intended for single occupancy. The units will be spread across a five-story building at 1415 Hillsborough Street near Park Avenue. Plans show the building will total 22,600 square feet. Each floor in the building will have 20 units and a laundry lounge in the center. There will also be a backyard for grilling and outdoor activities. The front courtyard will be fenced in for security for bicycle parking. Smoot said the estimated cost will be around $7 million, but he hasn't secured financing yet. Construction is expected to begin this summer with delivery in late 2023. The rental rate for the units will be around $1,000 a month with all utilities included. The units will be partially furnished with a couch and dining study table. Average rents in Raleigh for a one-bedroom apartment are around $1,300 a month, according to apartmentlist.com. Rent growth has fallen in recent months as the overall housing market has cooled. The units are meant to be small and affordable, so graduate students or young professionals who are working downtown can afford a place to live without having to share with roommates. Smoot said he is responding to the housing need for students and young professionals in Raleigh. Townhomes, apartments, cottages with pickleball planned. Development on Buffalo Road in northeastern Raleigh keeps heating up as a developer from Charleston, South Carolina, is planning a 388-unit project. EYC Companies submitted site plans for Fifth Oak, a townhome, cottage, and apartment for rent community. The project will include 86 townhomes, 58 cottages, and 244 apartments. The property sits at 7425 Buffalo Road, just outside Interstate 540. The townhomes will have 2 and 3 bedrooms. Both the cottages and apartments will have 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms. Interior features of the units will be granite or quartz countertops and smart tech. Fifth Oak will have amenities such as a pool and a pickleball court. EYC Chief Operating Officer Jim Caravello says townhome rents will be between $2,000 and $3,000 a month, in the high 1,000s and low 2,000s a month for cottages, and around $1,600 to $1,900 for apartments. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bramette. Carey Brewery to expand into Raleigh. Bond Brothers to open in project across from Raleigh Ironworks. A popular Carey Brewery that has become a core part of the growing, vibrant downtown in the community is planning to open a Raleigh location. Bond Brothers Beer Company is the second craft brewer to join a new mixed-use destination in Raleigh. Brothers Jeremy and Jay Bond are bringing a new taproom concept to the salvage yard at Raleigh Iron Works. The spot will be called NOCO, N-O-C-O, standing for No Company. An anticipated opening date has not been announced. The Salvage Yard, a project by Raleigh real estate developer Grubb Ventures, is located across from the main Raleigh Ironworks development, where Grubb is partnering with Atlanta-based Jamestown. NOCO will encompass 6,000 square feet of indoor space at the Salvage Yard. The project is made up of three existing warehouses totaling just over 100,000 square feet. One of the warehouses previously housed Big Boss Brewing, which last year announced it would be relocating. Triangle Rock Club is taking over the Big Boss Brewing space. Salvage Yard spans 10 acres off Atlantic Avenue. Work is expected to begin on the site this spring. The Bond Brothers Tap Room will offer a wide range of craft beer brewed on site, as well as coffee, tea, craft cocktails, wine, and light food options. The brand currently has two locations, both in Cary, the first located at 202 East Cedar Street is a brewery and bar. The second location opened in 2021 at 602 East Chatham Street and is known as Bond Brothers Eastside and hosts live music. The vision and scope of the Salvage Yard project is impressive, the Bond said in a press release from Grubb Ventures. To be included in this is extremely exciting. We look forward to bringing what we know and love to this new destination. Salvage Yard will be connected to Raleigh Ironworks via pedestrian pathways. So far, Ironworks has secured seven tenants. That includes Durham-based Pony Souris Brewing Company, Eatertainment Concept Jaguar Bolera, East Cut Sandwich Bar, FX Personal Training, Andia's Ice Cream, and Wasserman Media Group. North Hills remake adds chic restaurant to growing lineup. Lamani Grill, an upscale spot serving Mediterranean fare, is coming to North Hills. The restaurant brand's owners operate Lamani Grill in Long Island, New York, along with Lamani locations in the Rockefeller Plaza in Manhattan, Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, and Charlotte. The new location will focus on authentic Greek specialties and seafood. Diners can expect the menu to feature the traditional Mediterranean diet with offerings like cold-pressed olive oil from the Kalamata, capers from Santorini, and saffron from Kozani. The restaurant group opened its Charlotte location, its first venture outside of New York, in 2022. Its menu features a raw bar, whole fish, lamb shank, octopus, salads, and soups. And finally, Durham Car Dealership, part of $100 million deal. A Durham auto dealership in a busy retail corridor is one of eight car dealers recently sold in a deal totaling $121 million. Hudson Automotive Group of Charleston, South Carolina, acquired several Crown dealerships and a collision center from Atlanta-based Asbury Automotive Group in December. The company bought five Greensboro dealerships and a collision center, two Fayetteville locations, and the Durham dealership in the deal. Formerly known as Crown Honda of South Point, the dealership at 951 South Point Auto Park Boulevard in Durham, near the streets at South Point Shopping Mall, sold for $25 million, according to deed records, the highest price tag of the bunch. And now we'll read some of the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first big number, $104,000, the amount per acre an LLC based to Summit Real Estate Group in St. Louis paid for a 106-acre tract of land about 3 miles west of downtown Youngsville in Franklin County. An industrial development could be built on the land in the future. $325,000. That's the list price that a popular bourbon bar and its assets recently claimed. The Oak, located in Raleigh, has now changed ownership with Marco Fregenal of Fathom Realty and Nick Giugio of Apex Wings teaming up to purchase the restaurant. The end sale price was not disclosed. And our next big number is $25 million. That's the size of an investment supporting Traitology, a digital biology company in Research Triangle Park that's developing novel traits in soybeans that can be scaled up and commercialized. Fayez Kazi, who formerly led a subsidiary of Precision Biosciences, is launching Traitology with support from GDM Holdings. And now we're up to $56.5 million. That's the sales price for Edwards Mill townhomes and apartments near Crabtree Valley Mall. The price jumped $22 million from its previous sale in 2017. And there are also some quotes sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal in sections called He Said It or She Said It. The first one is Avalo Airlines CEO Andrew Levy on plans to launch service to six Florida cities from Raleigh-Durham International Airport. We're expecting to add service to a few other points, hopefully by summer. We're still finalizing our plans, but we're very optimistic about it. And the next quote is from town manager Rich Coppola. After Clayton settled with a developer who had sued after the town council denied plans for an apartment complex, as a result of the settlement, a 196-unit apartment complex on Amelia Church Road can now be built. I'm glad we were able to come to acceptable terms and resolve this matter without further litigation. And next is John Culver, former COO of Starbucks, on the brand strategy for 2023. That includes focusing on mobile orders, delivery, and drive-thru capabilities. In Raleigh, Starbucks has a drive-thru only location planned. The composition of customer visits have shifted versus what we saw in pre-pandemic. And in another He Said It, J.B. Buxton, president of Durham Technical Community College, on how Novo Nordisk's $6 million donation will support a new life sciences training center the college is building through a recently approved $112 million bond referendum. We have the ability now to construct a new life sciences training facility. That's a building. We need equipment. We need to make sure we have high-quality faculty working there. And finally, we have Anthimos Georgiadis, Zumper CEO. Given the amount of demand for rental homes, including from people priced out of buying, we don't expect to test a new bottom of the market. Oh, and next to that, here's one small article on the On Real Estate page written by Kaylee Thompson that we missed. More warehouse space planned. A Florida-based investment firm and a local advisory firm are planning industrial facilities in Raleigh next to their formerly owned Wake Tech Beltline Education Center. New Market Strategies of Florida and DRR Realty have filed new site plans for five light industrial buildings totaling more than 90,800 square feet at 1610 Wolfpack Lane. Four of the buildings will range from 19,000 to nearly 46,000 square feet, but the smaller building across Wolfpack Lane on the corner of Tar Heel Drive will be about 2,700 square feet. The site is located just outside the Beltline near Atlantic Avenue. An estimated cost wasn't provided as the company is in the early stages and the site plans are preliminary. And now we'll turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column, this one written by Evan Hooper, and it's concerning Lisa Chapman, President, Central Carolina Community College. The headline, her role, train future workers. Lisa Chapman leads a community college squarely in the center of NC's growth. As Lisa Chapman puts it, Central Carolina Community College is the largest North Carolina community college not located in an urban area. But the president of CCCC also acknowledges that could change as its coverage area, Chatham, Harnett, and Lee counties, continues to boom with growth. Pretty soon, CCCC will have to describe ourselves as a college that is not located in a rural area, Chapman says. The college has about 12,000 curriculum and short-term training students and will serve as the workforce engine powering the boom of what is being called the Carolina Core. The Carolina Core is a roughly 120-mile corridor stretching from just west of Winston-Salem down to the Fayetteville area. The area includes parts of the Triad, Siler City, Sanford, Lillington, and Dunn. The Carolina Core largely follows the route of U.S. Highway 421, which could one day become an interstate. There are some major manufacturing plants coming to this corridor, such as Toyota in Liberty, Wolfspeed in Siler City, and VinFast in Moncure. These investments represent thousands of new direct jobs and tens of thousands of indirect supplier jobs that will follow. These manufacturers need someone to train their new employees. That's where CCCC comes into play. The college is developing the E. Eugene Moore Manufacturing and Biotech Solutions Center, which will be housed in the old Morelli Manufacturing Building. In the center, about 30,000 square feet will be set aside for VinFast. For students who utilize your training programs, are these high school graduates or people later in their lives looking for a career shift? A larger percentage of those students would be students who have graduated high school and been out for at least a few years. It could be a student in their early 20s saying, I've been doing a job, now I'm looking for a career. The easiest way to do that is to engage in some short-term training. That gets you the entry-level skill set needed to begin working in that industry. What are your most popular short-term training programs? BioWork is probably the most popular right now. We also have welding, which is incredibly popular as well. We have an interest in construction, and also machining and industrial systems are some others. We're expanding our offerings in partnership with Randolph and Sandhills Community College for CDL, commercial driver's license, or truck driver training. We're seeing an increased interest in that as well. How is going to community college viewed now? I think that stigma is starting to change. I'm very much a believer in lifelong learning. You heard me repeatedly say career pathway. What I'm referencing is the educational portion of that career pathway that we can help students with. I think what we want people to understand and what is shifting, but we still need people to help share the message, is that there is incredible value for your career pathway in short-term training. I do think more people are seeing that. How will your college be different in 10 years? The development of the E. Eugene Moore Manufacturing and Biotech Solutions Center is an expansion of our main campus here in Lee County, which allows us to draw on all the strengths that we have here already. It will be designed to engage more people early on in understanding all these career opportunities that exist in manufacturing that people didn't know existed. Older folks like me could potentially have a vision of what they think manufacturing is. Younger people don't have any vision of what manufacturing is at all. We want to make sure they get something realistic. We will have showcase areas to have middle, elementary, and high school students come through and see what's available in this dynamic, changing community we're living in. What will be part of the Moore Center? We're developing areas in phases because there's a lot of redesign that will need to take place. We've got two buildings that we're working on. There's a smaller building, about 3,000 square feet, that we'll be using for the truck driver training and that coalition with our two other sister colleges. When the training is offered here in Lee County, it'll be at the Moore Center, hopefully starting sometime later this spring. The next stage will involve remodeling a separate building for our biotech and life sciences program. We can have some biotech labs and some distinction from what we will do with the other manufacturing areas. Then we are going to work within the larger building to develop welding, industrial systems, and engineering technology. We'll bring programs over that are in the main campus that are in sort of tight spaces now. We'll be able to expand their offerings. There will be a soft landing space in that area. Say a company comes to the area and needs some office space, we can work with them to provide what we're terming soft landing space to grow. And the final question is, what keeps you up at night? And I'll summarize the answer as we're running out of time. The answer was basically the safety of the students because of the open campus structure. The primary thing that I think about the most that keeps me awake is the safety culture. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.